Well, Rob Williams, we made it. We actually had meaningful college football this past weekend. Was it enough for you, Rob?
Of course not. It was absolutely not enough. It was not enough. I needed, look, I'll tell my business. I just bought a new 85-inch TV. The quad box looks phenomenal on this screen, and I didn't get the quad box as long as I wanted to, Matt. Next week, look, I've already blocked it off. Next week is my Christmas. It's my favorite holiday of the year. It's my favorite weekend of the year. Look, Labor Day, it means water and football and probably some type of grilled food. All right, so yep. We're checking all the boxes next weekend, plus the Gamecocks play early, so we'll be able to get in, get out, settle in for a showdown in Baton Rouge, plus some other games on there as well. We're definitely locked in. But the appetizer was nice in week zero. It has been lighter in years past. And shout out, Four Quarter Friday plug here. Shout out to Mountain View Prep running back Jalen McGill scoring the first touchdown for the Tar Heels over in Ireland and ultimately getting the win for the Tar Heels.
Yeah, that was actually a very fun game, I felt like. It seemed like a good game. It was kind of a defensive struggle. It was not what I was expecting at all. But yeah, and it actually had some type of, you know, relevance for South Carolina because Kendall Briles was the offensive coordinator at TCU last year. Obviously the offense didn't look quite as good as maybe it did last year when they gave up an opening drive touchdown North Carolina and put 40 plus in a row on them. So it was interesting.
No doubt. I mean, you lose your coordinator and your quarterback if you're TCU and you're trying to redo it. But then, you know, you look at a defensive struggle, that's kind of how Belichick drew it up, right? Like, I think people can forget about his defensive prowess because of the run with Brady. But those first three Super Bowls with Tom Brady were very run-heavy, defensive-led teams. And I'm a Patriots homer and think Tom's the GOAT. So don't forget about Bill Belichick when it comes to defense. And if Bobby Petrino gets the offense humming, it's the ACC, Matt. Like, the Tar Heels can make some noise.
They absolutely can, but we know everyone's here to talk about Gamecock football. Right. We'll have plenty more with Justin Lyles of SportsGuyValue.com later, breaking down this past week's slate and then what's ahead. And Rob will do his debut of the best bets. We've both picked five games. Justin will tell us where we're right, where we're wrong, and then give you some picks for himself. But the Gamecocks will kick off the season in Williams-Brice Stadium this upcoming Saturday at 12:45 p.m. It's a 36.5 point spread for South Carolina. They are favored, and the over-under is set at 53.5. So probably like a 40-something to single-digits game is kind of what Vegas is saying right now. We'll see how it gets bet throughout the week. And we will talk a lot about that throughout the show. But, Rob, right now, like, it's what's going to happen this upcoming week. So we're going to go over our projected depth chart. Just kind of putting the pieces of the puzzle together. I do have a couple of projection articles actually for the Gamecock offense. I'm going to ask Rob if my projections are crazy, what the range is that he feels most comfortable in. And then we will also kind of talk about South Carolina might have one of their best rosters in a long time, Rob, but at the same time, it's only how good is your roster against the rest of the SEC. We know the SEC and Big Ten are the toughest conferences in the country. So we're going to do a dive there. We have a Kent State preview. We'll give our predictions on that. And then, as we talked about earlier, we'll get to our best bets. So, Rob, I'll start out with you. Do you think that Cutter Woods will be the starting quarterback week one against Kent State?
I think if I said that, you'd need to kick me off right now. If I thought that was the case, you would need to kick me off absolutely right now. Good positive returns about Cutter Woods, though. I think that what he's doing to work his way up is encouraging. Is it too early to start seeding the Cutter Woods versus Landon Duckworth battle for next year? I think it's a little too early, but that is going to be a topic of discussion as soon as December gets here, Matt.
Well, it's also a conversation that's going to be fleshing out against Kent State and Towson and maybe some other teams on the schedule. Who's getting the reps? How do they look? And look, you know, I think Lenore Sellers is locked in as QB1. I think that he has potential for a very, very special season with Kendall Briles. It kind of marries up everything that he is good at with also some more dynamic offense, which he desperately needs. At running back, Rob, would you agree with me? It's probably Matt Fuller, then Christian Clark, then, you know, Howell, Augustave, and then Jabri Coleman's. He's making a move as well to get reps this year. Wide receivers where it gets a little crazy for me, Rob, and this was the hardest part about doing the projections. We'll talk about later. But, I mean, who's wide receiver one in your mind, Rob?
It's got to be Nick Harbor, and I think we can kind of put that one over to the side. It appears we can put that over to the side just based on the longevity, the skill set, the upside, of course, and the track on which he has leveled up from year to year. I think that it's reasonable to say that he is wide receiver one going into this year. I've got a couple of guys in mind that I would put at 2 and 3 right now, Matt, but it is really, really tough with that room. And I think as you work your way down, you know, Kendall Briles has said he wants 6 to 8 in the rotation for that group. And getting to 8 is really difficult to do in terms of putting them in order.
It's the hardest part. I do think that Mazio Bennett's going to start at slot, and I would be shocked if DJ Black wasn't the other outside wide receiver in the starting lineup.
We're on the
but
same
then,
page.
Man, you get to Sequel Patterson, Nitro Tuggle. Oh my gosh, you have Donovan Murph, you have Jordan Gidron, you have Malik Clark, you have Lex Cyrus. You have so many players that were 4 stars coming out of high school. And look, you want to talk about the team in the upstate, Rob? What did they do for years and years? Just get 4-star receivers and let them battle it out. I don't know how it's all going to shake out. I can do the best I can with, like, you know, predicting 5 wide receivers to get the most targets. But I think if I had to do a pecking order right now, it'd be Harbor, Mazio, DJ Black. And then after that, you know, it's Sequel Patterson's doing some amazing things in practice. Donovan Murph is, I'm the biggest Donovan Murph fan in the world. I don't know if you were going to say that too, Rob, but I also might be the second biggest Sequel Patterson fan.
Yeah, I agree with you that I would go Mazio Bennett, DJ Black in the 2 and 3 spot. And then I'm probably going Murph at least now to start off with. Here's what it's interesting to me, because we have Kent State and Towson coming up, and you talk about, oh, what's the backup battle between Cutter Woods and Landon Duckworth, and how do we see that play out? 5 for 5, also keep in mind, everybody, we're not holding anybody out for red shirts. You're not trying to, it's not a 4-game and then you can't play like deal anymore. This changes the narrative a little bit. But when I look at this wide receiver room, Matt, it's definitely going to be who makes the most of their opportunities in these first 2 weeks. I think that they will make every effort, and by they, I mean the coaching staff, to get these guys opportunities to get out there and get some touches. And then if you see some guys make plays, that's going to go a long way, considering it doesn't appear that there's been a ton of separation in preseason in the middle of that pack. You make a couple plays in a game, you're going to get some opportunities when the SEC schedule gets here in just a few weeks.
I think it's twofold, Rob. I think it's exactly what you just said. And then also, who knows the playbook best? Who's going to block? Who's going to catch the ball? Who's going to run Chris Sprouts, right? And because, you know, what Kendall Briles wants to do is go fast. And we don't have to harp this. We've harped it, gosh, Rob, for 6 months now, I feel like. But you got to know what you're doing. You got to be position flexible. You got to be able to move to the slot. Like Nick Harbor has to come into the slot sometimes. Mazio is going to go outside. DJ Black, Donovan Murph, all of them. So that's going to be the kind of sticking point for me there.
I think if Nick Harbor can develop as a guy that can work out of the slot as well, and really find some success moving inside from time to time, then he gets to be super, super, super lethal. If he can do a couple of possession type things, because we saw it against Texas A&M, everybody continues to point this out. But if he runs intermediate routes and catches the ball in space, he has the ability to make everybody else look slow on the football field, regardless of the angle that they have against him.
I agree. And, you know, looking at, you know, tight ends, I see a question in here. Big Red's asking that. It's going to be Brady Hunt, Mike Tyler, and Mo Brown. It's going to be that combination of those three guys. I don't know. Look, you know, Kendall Briles is going to feature the tight end, and we all know what Knox did in his couple seasons in Arkansas and his season in South Carolina with Kendall Briles. He's going to feature the tight end, and we'll get to it later, but the tight end, it might be kind of like a Frankenstein monster. Who gives us the best matchup this week? Who's better at this? Where can we attack the defense? At, you know, offensive line, Rob, no, let me go ahead. Talk about Mike Tyler. I know you want to.
Well, that's what I was going to – my specific contact has said that it's Brady Hunt and Mike Tyler that are going to be your top ones. But expected a big – I think what Brady can do is special with this group. because he, I think he just gets forgotten about, and the flashiness and the athleticism of Mike Tyler has really come on. But I think those two guys have by far the most sure hands out of that group.
Yeah.
And I do think, like you said, Kendall Briles is going to use this tight end. I think there was a little like back and forth and maybe some confusion about that. But I talked to a contact who was intimately involved with knowing what's going to go on with the offense. I'll put it that way. Who said they're going to get their opportunities. They're going to throw to them. So, you know, I'm excited to see what that looks like. Does that give Lenora Sellers? Josh Simon made this offense a couple of years ago. Can one of those guys get into that role and not be the leading receiver on the team, but can they just get into that safety net role for the North Sellers? That will go a long way, Matt, in alleviating some of the pressure that's coming off the edges.
Brady Hunt, wherever the holes
are on the offensive line.
Yeah, that's where I was going right there, Rob. Brady Hunt's a decent blocking tight end. I don't know what Mike Tyler can do in that area. He's not been someone that, as someone said, hey, this guy's a great blocking tight end. Right. But I will say that Mike Tyler's he's the kind of guy you want your daughter to marry, honestly. He's super smart. He graduated with a 4.0 out of high school, probably more with the high school scale. He's built like $1 million, and he really cares, and he's quiet, though. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to be a loud, boisterous person. But we'll see what happens there. Like, the tight end was hard to project. We'll get to it later. The offensive line, Rob, like, I'll go through who I think the starters are going to be, and, you know, you can throw in your 2 cents on this. I don't think these are going to be the starting offensive linemen come Alabama, come, you know, Georgia, Clemson, you know, later in the season. But right now, I think that you will see Shed Surratt play left tackle week one. I think you're going to see Nolan Hay at left guard, Carter Miller at center, Poku at right guard, and then Dane Arnett at right tackle. I think you're going to see Darius Gray definitely play week one. I think you're going to see Hank Purvis definitely play in week one and Seth Smith week one. Probably Aja Dahan as well. They're probably going to play 8, 9 offensive linemen if they're able to. But the one thing that it keeps getting reinforced to me is they're going to try and get a lead. And if they can't get a lead, they're going to put somebody else in. But it's not going to be substitutions like mid-drive. So I think you'll probably see that starting lineup of Surratt, Hay, Miller, Poku, and Arnett probably play 70% of snaps. But they're going to get other guys in, and then Towson gives them another opportunity.
Yeah, I don't have any pushback on that starting group. And Darius Gray is obviously the big factor of who – where does he come in first? You had him there coming in maybe at right tackle first. I think that's a good educated guess. I would put it that way for you, right? Like, but I think that he has the position flexibility that he could slot in anywhere. So if you do see somebody faltering early, or God forbid there's an injury or anything like that, I think Darius Gray could be the first one up, six man coming off, and he can kind of swing a little bit too. I do think the staff would like to see what he can do at multiple spots. If he can play tackle, then that's going to be obviously a little more valuable. But I just don't know, Matt. I think he has the position flexibility. You know, trigger word there for anybody who survived through the Muschamp era. But he does have that position flexibility to move around, and I think he'll be the first one up. I think also that you're right. Those guys are going to play a lot of snaps in that starting group, but there is going to be a heavy rotation to kind of figure out, hey, is somebody else going to kind of jump out here or there? Because if nothing else, you want to know what you can do in the case of an injury in the SEC, schedule. You don't want to find out on the fly if somebody goes down. Inevitably, somebody's going to tweak an ankle here or there, and not even a major injury, but if you have to go out for a critical drive against an SEC team at the Swamp against Florida, and maybe you're down 3 with 4 minutes left and you got to drive the field and somebody tweaks an ankle, we need to know who that is. The staff needs to know and see game reps, quality game reps for that player beforehand, and get that pinned down before that comes up on them.
The last thing I'll say on the offensive line, well, 2 things before we move on to defensive line. I think Nolan Hay might be the most valuable player on the offensive line from a guard to center, you know, right guard, center, left guard. you know, going across the line. Like, he has so much position versatility that if that were to happen, I think you see, you would see him be kind of a plug and play guy and somebody that the staff trusts. And look, I'll just say this too. Nolan Hay, like, everybody that I talk to just says he's a really good football player, but he might not be an all SEC lineman, if that makes any sense. And you don't need all SEC linemen to be a successful offensive line. And remember, Jacarius Peak is going to come back. Like, we're still targeting for, you know, Mississippi State. I'm not going to say I'd be shocked if he wasn't in the lineup for Mississippi State, but at the same time, he will come back in, and he has a lot to prove too, because same thing with Dylan Stewart with the defensive line. Like, they want to put good film on tape and get drafted as highly as possible. Mm-hmm. Defensive line, man, it's kind of interesting. I think Anthony Addison, and then you're going to see Caleb Herring start at the two defensive end spots. George Wilson, I'm excited about seeing. I think that the first two games he could really flash. And then, look, Julian Walker, I know that you kind of had why am I blanking on this? Jadeveon Clowney, and then you had Dylan Stewart as I wanted to call him Jakavion Clowney, and I was like, that's not right. Jadeveon Clowney and then Dylan Stewart were like two of the most highly anticipated defensive ends that have come through this program in a while. And to have a Julian Walker, I know the fans want to see him. They want to see him get after it. So I'm cautiously optimistic about defensive end over the first 2 weeks of the season. Yep. I want to see how they do against the run. That's my biggest question mark.
I completely agree. They got to set the edge. And that's going to be pivotal when you get into a 9-game SEC schedule. It's going to be pivotal against a Clemson team that is probably going to be run heavy, if I had to guess right now. We'll see how that develops. That we got a long way to go before Thanksgiving, but you're going to have teams that are going to just pound it unless you can stop them. Setting the edge is huge, and you're going to get into games, especially in week three, with dual threat quarterbacks who are going to try to come around that edge. Can you defend that run as well, Matt? The thing that I am interested in, much like the Old Dominion game a couple of years ago, which we don't want to talk about a whole lot.
Yeah.
Offensively, a lot to be desired in that game. Defensively, though, the Gamecocks defense handled Old Dominion as they should. They looked like they were slinging them around like rag dolls out there. There was no opportunity to really do a whole lot of anything. And in passing situations, they were unstoppable. You could not block them because we're coming with multiple guys that you can't block. So my point of emphasis here with Kent State and with Towson is, can you send the house a little bit, or not even on a blitz? I'm just saying, like, on a pure passing down. Do you have the ends? Do you have the interior linemen to get penetration and say, you have to throw it right here. It's 3rd and 15, and you absolutely will not get this pass off unless you throw a screen or something that's going to be a quick hitter.
I don't disagree at all, especially with the defensive tackles. I think we do think Brownlow Dindy and Dorjaye is going to be the starters there, but then you have a plethora of guys that you can keep running in there, which helps you, you know, throw guys around like a rag doll if you need to, because that pressure up the middle, especially the first couple games, and even Mississippi State, like, I don't want to get too far ahead of us, Rob, but if you can flush Camario out of the pocket, now the field gets cut in half and he's got to figure out what he's going to do with the ball. Like, it does help South Carolina. Defensive tackles, they're kind of like the underrated part of the defensive line. Everyone likes the flashy stats, like the sacks, the quarterback hurries, all of that. But, you know, Aaron Donald just got signed to a potentially $30 million contract because he's the most dominant defensive tackle probably in my lifetime in the NFL. So the defensive tackles are going to be a big deal there. Linebacker, don't got to spend much time on this. I do think it's going to be Justin O and J.R. Johnson, Fred Johnson, starting. I think Sean Murphy's going to be in there a lot. Nickelback, I mean, it's Scott and Kilgore we've talked about in the past. We'll see who ultimately wins that battle. My money's on Quayshawn Scott right now, but Kilgore's really good. Defensive back, you have Vicari Swain, Judge Collier, and then Koski Barnes, keep an eye on it. Ethan Chapman, I think is his name. He's going to be coming through. And then DeMarcus Leach. Safety, you're not going to get rid of Peyton Williams for anybody else right now. Same thing. with David Busey. He's going to start. Zayvon Kearns is going to play. And you also have Kendall Daniels. Place kicker, though, Rob, this is what I wanted to talk to you about. How worried on a scale of 1 to 10 are you at this point?
So I did a little digging on this one this week because I knew this question was coming, and I was also – I don't remember if it was Wednesday when I was on the morning show with Jamie or if I was just watching another day and the conversation was happening. But anyway, I went to my contacts here and asked specifically about this one. It's just an inconsistency of why nobody's grabbing this. What was told to me is they'll all have a really good day and they'll all have a bad day to follow it up. That you're not getting back-to-back days of making kicks. And I did ask, you know, informed guess here, who do you think it's going to be? And I got Upton Belenfant, so that's who I'm going to go with to fill that
same,
fill that
same thing I've heard, by the way.
I think experience plays into that for him. Like, he's played a lot of football. He's been around a lot. And so right out of the gate, you want somebody that's going to go out there and at least have the been there, done that type of approach to it.
I think you're going to have to see a situation where, and I think they'll definitely do this against Kent State and Towson. Like, if it's 4th and 8 from the 37, I don't think they're going to show their 4th and 8 play that they want to use later in the season. It will give them a real game opportunity to go out there and drill it, right? So we'll see what happens. At punter, I'm not worried about Max Kelly at all. I'm not worried about Vakari Swain or Nick Harbor returning kicks. And look, if the season becomes too important or they can't do it, I'm sure they'll make a move. But in my mind, like, I have 4 or 3 or now 5 potential seasons with the player at the college level. Let's maximize the best talent on the roster to win at the margins. And that's what special teams is. It's winning at the margins. We'll see if they are able to do it. So, Rob, this is going to be fun. I'm going to do an over-under segment with you. And I know you're a big over-under guy. So we're going to start with the quarterback position with Lenore Sellers. And when you're ready, I'll say – you ready? Let me see
it. I'm ready.
Okay, you're ready. Over-under Lenore Sellers, 2,800 passing yards.
I'm going to go over. I'm going to go over on this. I've had my eye on 3,000. And that's really, you know, I mentioned it before. I'm going to steal your next one a little bit, but I've said it here on the record before that I think him throwing for 3,000 and rushing for 700 is not out of the question for me.
Okay. So are we going to go over on 2,800 yards passing and over on 650 rushing yards?
Yeah, I'm going to hit the over on both of those. Look, we've seen him be in the 600 plus range. Anyway, I don't think it's unheard of. And you've also seen this in Kendall Brawl's offenses. I'll go back and say that again. When you look at KJ Jefferson, you look at De'Eriq King, when you have guys that have some ability to run, and neither of those guys is Lenore Sellers in open space for what it's worth. So if, and also KJ Jefferson had Rocket Sanders, so it's not like he didn't have a back to lean on. He still ran the ball. So, I don't want to get us bogged down here, but I think the stats show that somewhere in that 650 range is what you can come to expect from Lenore Sellers when he's having a good opportunity and a good year, and a Kendall Browse quarterback who has rushing ability. It doesn't take a lot to get 50 yards spread out over the season and get him over 700. That's where I have the number kind of in my mindset there.
I don't think it does either. All right, so we're going to go – we talked about Lenore Sellers. We'll go to running back. Matt Fuller, over – 799 rushing yards, over under.
I'm going to go under because I believe in this by committee approach. Yeah. But I think just statistically looking at the approach that we've been sold, the hot hand, the nature of a Kendall Brawl's offense, not really subbing a lot, the statements that we've heard about Matt Fuller and his ability. He's also a big time home run hitter, which can allow you to stack up your yards really quickly if you can go grab a couple of big ones, Matt. So that's why I'm going to go over. I'm hesitant because I think there's a chance there's 3 or 4 running backs that really split carries here. But my gut tells me if he gets off to a good start, he's going to get 18 carries a game. And that'll get him over if he does what we think he's going to do.
All right. Next one with Matt Fuller, because I think this is big. Well, let's do Matt Fuller and Christian Clark combined.
Okay.
rushing touchdowns over under 11.
Between the two of them.
Yeah.
Ugh. Can I push? Can I go right at 11? You didn't give me a half.
We're going to go 10.5.
Okay.
10.5. Over under 10.5.
I'll go over 10.5 then, because I kind of do like it somewhere around 11 to 12. That 10 to 12 range is exactly, of course, right where you put the number. No doubt about it. But yeah, I think that you're going to see Lenore Sellers obviously get into the end zone some. You're going to throw the football some. But keep in mind here, you're looking at 13 games theoretically from this team based on my projection. We did record predictions. I had them 8-4. That's going to give you a 13th game. When I'm looking at touchdowns here.
Oh no, all this is 12 games. Let me stop you there.
Okay.
12 game schedule.
I'm still going to go over it if you set it at 10.5. I want it at 11. I think it's at 11. I was going to push it, but that was my number in my head. So.
All right. I'm going to get to pass catchers right now, Rob. And just so, I don't know if everyone's seen the article. You can go find it. There's three of them. They're really fun, but going to give Rob some a little bit of cheat sheet, a little crib sheet here. So with Kendall Briles, with a dual threat quarterback, they usually have one primary outside wide receiver that gets 21 to 26% of the targets.
Mm-hmm.
Then usually a secondary slot receiver that gets somewhere between 13, 17%. And then a tight end, 9 to 15%. And then running backs and like rotational wide receivers get 3 to 7%, whoever steps up. So here's my first over-under question for you, Rob Williams, of Four Quarter Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Over-under, 6.5 targets per game for Nicholas Harbor.
Ooh, 6.5 targets, I think, potentially gets him to 50 catches, which is kind of where my head is.
Yeah.
I'm going to go under, though. I'm going to go under because I understand the track record with Kendall Briles. However, I do think it's a little unique this year in that this receiver room is so competitive. And I do think that Lenoris tends to spread the ball out a good bit. And I think that safety net at the tight end is going to steal a little bit here. It's going to steal a little bit here. I think you're going to run out of snaps, Matt. As fast as they're going to go,
yeah.
I think if the run game can be semi-productive, and Lenoris is also going to have some called runs himself, like there's no way you're not doing that. And then there's going to be passing plays where it breaks down and he scrambles. I think you're going to run out of snaps to get all these receivers the balls that they deserve, and that's just going to be what it is.
That's the hard part. I'm going to get to the other receivers here in a second, but I do want to ask you a question about Mazio Bennett, because both of us are very high on Mazio. We were very high on Jaden Sellers. It's okay to have two good players that play the same position. That's actually what you want if you don't know that. But Mazio Bennett, over under 50 targets this year. I'll give you 50. You can take the push.
No, I'm not even going to take it. I'm too high on this one. I'm going over. Okay. Because and I said this, you know, I've said this on multiple shows and I'll say it again. Last year I predicted Harbor to lead the team in receiving touchdowns and Bennett to lead the team in receiving yards. That didn't work out for me last year, but I'm doubling down on it again this year. I think that will be the case. I think you take the top off with Harbor, and I think you can work your way down the field with Bennett, and that's going to be kind of how it goes. He has this ability, Matt, to find holes and sit down. His freshman year, and he's got to continue to grow and improve from that, but one of the things that stuck out to me was he didn't have to catch a ton of balls in a lot of traffic, because he would tend to find himself really open, like really open.
Like to open to the point where like, don't drop it because I'm so open.
Yes. And the ability to run, you talk about running crisp routes, his ability to run crisp routes and break off into space is huge. That also gives him the ability to run after the catch. So that would be the big thing I'm looking at this year. Obviously, I'm going to take last year out of the equation a little bit. Mazio Bennett's freshman year, There were some passes that were like on the sideline, or he would fall down after he caught them. I want to see what he can do after he catches the ball in space. But since you asked me a target question, I think they're going to pump it to him because I think he's going to be out there early and often, and he's going to be the one that is kind of flashing over the middle for Lenore Sellers.
I am very thankful that I agree with you, and I wrote an article about Mazio Bennett being the X factor back in July.
Yes.
And I really think he can be, and I'm completely throwing out last year, by the way. I don't count anything from last year with Mazio Bennett. All right, last one here. If you had to pick the, and this isn't over under, this is just pick the most receiving yards at the end of the season from DJ Black, Donovan Murph, Nitro Tuggle, and Sequel Patterson. Who are you picking?
Oh, that is, you're killing me. Most receiving.
Gotta pick one.
Most receiving yards. Most yards. Man, it's so hard to go against DJ Black right now. The returns that we have, it's really hard to go against him. I think that Donovan Murph has the most snaps from last year out of those guys that we're talking about. But when I think about DJ Black, here's the thing that really gets me. And I want to remind everybody, not only was he here before, but he was at Limestone with Mike Furry as the head coach. The familiarity that he has with his position coach is going to be one that allows him, I think, to seamlessly transition into what Mike Furry wants to do from a developmental standpoint. He has elite physical tools in terms of speed, and he proved it last year at UCF that he has the ability to go out and be a 30-plus reception receiver in the Power Four. Okay? I don't think he needed to prove that to anybody else. Who cares what we think, what fans think, what opposing defenses think? I don't care about any of that. DJ Black showed himself, yeah, I got this. And I think that has lifted him into a confident receiver that South Carolina has on this roster this year, and that gets a little more dangerous. So that's why I'm going to go with DJ Black.
And everything you just said, Rob, I'll agree with, because we look at Lenore Sellers, you know, pass completion percentage last year, and the same way I'm throwing out stuff for Mazio Bennett, I'm somewhat throwing out stuff for Lenore Sellers last year. I don't think it was the proper situation for him. And like, he was under pressure 163 times last year. That's an insane number. But I do think Lenore's like might store the information he got with Mike Shula for the professional level combined with Kendall Briles. I think that'll happen. I've heard that's happening. So I feel comfortable saying it. But yeah, DJ Black, like Shane Beamer said it, just turn on the tape. Like look at his film. He had a not great quarterback last year. Like, I mean, really not great quarterback. And he still put up some numbers. I think that's what turned me off to him at the start. Like, oh, DJ Black's going to be wide receiver 2 or 3. That scared me. It doesn't scare me anymore. I've heard too much rave reviews. So, Rob, we're going to play one more game of over-under before we get Justin Lyles of sportscatvalue.com in here and start talking about the Kent State game. So, we've talked a lot about Phil Steele, right? And how he's ranked different position groups in the SEC when we went through the position, or not position groups, the team-by-team schedules and team-by-team previews. So, Phil Steele has the South Carolina Gamecocks as the number 7 quarterback room in the SEC. Over, under on that one, Rob?
I think they should be higher. I think, yeah. You know, 7th, we look at, you know, there's a potential in Lenore Sellers alone to get you into the top 3. I think that I would have Lenore Sellers preseason a top 5 SEC quarterback just based on what we know about the skill set and the reasons for why things happened last year. I think if you let's poll coaches around the SEC and say you can steal one quarterback, who are you stealing? I think you're going to get a 40% return at least that says Lenore Sellers, which tells me a lot about what he can do and how he would be coveted, if not higher number than that.
I think that if you said you can pick any 3 quarterbacks that are on your team to be your starter in the SEC, I think he would be a top 3 quarterback.
Absolutely.
Kind of similar to what you were saying. All right, so running back, Phil Steele has the Gamecocks at 14th best running back room in the conference. Remember, there's only 16 teams, so we're doing over-under here. Do you want me to start or do you want to this time? I don't want to put all the pressure on you.
No, I just think that it's an unproven situation, which is why they are where they are. And I'm okay with that because I think the chip on the shoulder of this running back room is probably a good thing to go out there. And I think them flying under the radar, let everybody focus on Lenore Sellers and Nick Harbor. Let everybody look at the tape of Mazio Bennett as a freshman, and then he's back out there. Let everybody turn on DJ Black's tape. What you're not going to have is a lot of Christian Clark tape. What you're not going to have is you're not going to have a lot of Isaiah Augustov tape with Shedeur Sanders because they didn't run the ball a lot, even though he led the team in rushing. You have limited Matt Fuller tape from last year with South Carolina, even in terms of success. So let them be undersold. I think that bodes well for South Carolina. So I'm not pushing back on that number a ton just because they're unproven.
I'd say somewhere in that 7-9 range. With pass catchers, Phil Steele has the Gamecocks at 5th overall in the SEC, which I think is pretty dead on.
I agree. I think it's really fair. I think it speaks also to what Phil Steele knows about this group, that maybe even across the – I was going to say nationally, but even across the league, I think it's undersold a little bit. Because they're not names that you know. You look at Texas, you got Ryan Wingo, and oh, by the way, yeah, we added Cam Coleman, who's arguably the best receiver in the country. That's going to get you some attention. These aren't necessarily – unless you're a recruiting person, you probably don't know all the names on this South Carolina receiver room, but you will. I think you will.
And then Big Red in here, Big Red 2494, the O-line will be the key to our success this year. Yeah, I probably should have said that earlier. Like, all those projections that we made about Lenore Sellers, the running backs, the wide receivers, starts with the O-line. Phil Steele actually has the Gamecocks with the 13th best offensive line in the SEC. And I think that is a little bit gracious to your point, like what Phil Steele actually knows. I probably would have put the Gamecocks dead last if I was – a national media guy looking at last season, not tracking everything, but I have the Gamecocks more 9th to 12th with like a show me, right? You know, like show me.
Everybody says show me, and that's what they're going to have to do, Matt. And I don't know how quickly do you get a good read on that show me. Come back and talk to me after Tuscaloosa.
I agree there. Defensive line, Phil Steele has 5th. If you go over under for me, I think when Stewart's healthy, it's a top 4 unit in the SEC. I think that all the questions we asked earlier about stopping the run, getting after the passer, like I think with Stewart there, it makes it better. I'd say 5 is just about right because I do think he's going to play this year. So it's just a matter of when.
Yeah, I agree. I'm right there with you. And by the way, 5 would be good enough.
Yeah.
To launch this team to 9 or 10 wins for sure. You think about the defenses that have existed in South Carolina's best teams ever. It all starts up front, Matt. Even though I would say that the South Carolina program is probably a little more known for DBs, it does really start up front. And if that defensive line is fit 4th or 5th in the league, and that's how this thing finishes, then you're knocking on a playoff door.
Well, I think to add to that, Rob, the amount of quarterbacks that haven't really taken more than 100 snaps in a game that are on the schedule this year, and then we're going to go right back to this linebacker core and secondary. Phil Steele has a linebacker core at 11. Like, I am on this island, and I have said they have to show me more. And everyone in the world tells me they're great. They're going to be awesome. They had a year of experience. I'm still worried. I think it's 8 to 10 in the SEC. What about you, Rob?
I would probably go in that 5 to 7 range just based off of pure athletic ability. It's all about false steps for me. It's all about the mental thing. There are zero questions physically with these guys. We've seen slow linebackers at South Carolina, like actually slow linebackers, but we know that if you take false steps as a linebacker, you look much slower than you are. They do have sideline to sideline speed. That's the game these days. You've got to be able to be this insane freak at the linebacker position. You got to be able to cover guys like Brady Hunt and Mike Tyler. You got to be able to cover guys like Tre'Davious Green and in years past, the swath of guys that have come through Georgia, right? South Carolina has those types of players if they make the first step correctly. That's the biggest thing for me.
The first step's everything for me. It's the angles. It's like the reaction time. It's everything for me. You think about the secondary. Phil Steele has the Gamecocks at eighth. It's probably fair because you do have names that, you know, a lot of Gamecock fans are wondering, who's David Busey? Who's Jasavion Kearns? Like, people that don't follow recruiting, they don't know. But I would probably say that it's close to top four in the SEC, if that makes sense.
I think that it can be. Yeah. I think Vakari Swain is the one that's going to get the most attention. Judge Collier's flying under the radar because of the injury last year. And outside of that, nobody's given South Carolina any points for Peyton Williams and David Busey. All right. Nobody's given preseason points for those guys. And you're not really getting a ton of credit for Gerald Kilgore or Quasheed Scott, even though he had success at Kentucky. People are going to go, eh, but Kentucky. So you're really looking at Vakari Swain leading this group in terms of national perspective, and that's getting attention off of being a punt returner.
Yep.
So
right on it.
Our perspective is, oh, it's Torian Gray. So they're going to be fine. And by the way, don't forget about Currents and Daniels, who could at some point supplant the starters, and then you have 2 6-4 creatures running around back there. So can it be higher than eighth? Yes. Is it
I
right
think it's
now?
There too.
Meh.
I was surprised that Phil Steele gave the Gamecocks 8 overall in the SEC. That's like dead middle, a little bit over dead middle, like towards like the good side. We talked about place kicker earlier. We don't have to go into that conversation again. I do think that Shane Beamer knows what he's doing. I think that Matt Smiley comes from the NFL and can find the different edges and angles to make things work. So I'm not that worried about special teams. Coaching staff, though, Rob, this is one that I'm going to give you a minute on, 2 minutes on, because I was surprised with all of his rankings and like the blue chip ratio and everything the Gamecocks have that Phil Steele rated the Gamecocks coaching staff 6th overall in the conference. That's a lot of respect.
It is a lot of respect. I think that for me, it really starts with Clayton White. If we want to talk about staff as a whole, the tenure of Clayton White is something that needs to be studied around the SEC, right? There's just not a lot of guys that hang out for that long because either they take head coaching jobs or they get fired. And we've talked about the reasoning for why these coordinators are not taking head coaching jobs anymore. We don't have to get into that a ton right now. Just that, you know, from a monetary standpoint and from a program standpoint in the temperature of the league or in the temperature of the sport around the country, it doesn't behoove you to go over to a G5 and take a job when you can just wait on the right Power Four. So that has a little something to do with it. But I think the growth of Clayton White over his time at South Carolina is huge too. Torian Gray speaks for himself. You got the NFL players there to go on the resume, co-defensive coordinator now. Kendall Briles also kind of speaks for himself at this point, Matt. Okay. The experience of a guy like Randy Clements, the pedigree of a guy like Stan Drayton, who are the guys on that rap sheet? Former associate head coach at Texas, Stan Drayton.
Yeah.
So you have that experience there. Deion Barnes has guys like Abdul Carter on his resume and was at a program that is a national blue blood in Penn State. So you do have pieces on this staff, I think, Matt, that can garner a little bit of respect if you start to dig into it really, really well. Oh, and by the way, let's not forget about guys, our guys, Sean Elliott, who is a Gamecock through and through, has proven it as a head coach, proven it as an assistant, been at multiple positions, and his units always perform well. So I think, you know, as you work,
I think it's also
around,
a combination of Randy Clements and Kendall Briles, like that matters.
Yeah, I do. I think it matters.
We gotta hit a quick break. We are a little bit behind schedule, but at the same time, we gotta get Justin Lyles of sportscatvalue.com in here. And we're gonna preview the Kent State game, give our predictions. Rob's gonna lead that. We got all kinds of stats and nuggets for you. And then we're gonna give our best bet segment. It's coming back. My favorite segment of the year. So let's hear a word from our sponsors, and when we come back, can't wait to break down Kent State, 6 days away. So, Rob, we're so excited to have Justin Lyles of sportscatvalue.com back after a little break. You know, look, it's not his full-time job. It's just what actually pays the mortgage each month at sportscapvalue.com. He's still gotta do his day to day. But Justin, we're about to break down this Kent State game. I don't know what you've looked at. I'm sure you have an angle for somebody here in a little bit. But real quick, Rob, before I tee you up, Kent State went 5-7 last year under Mark Carney, who was the interim coach about 3 days before this season started. They started 1-4. They finished 4-4 in MAC play. They almost made a bowl game. So 5-7 season. I don't know how you can compare SEC to MAC play, but they do have some players, Rob. So let's talk about some of the good players that are on this Flash team.
Yeah. I think it's notable. You mentioned that Mark Carney was the interim there right before the season. So you can kind of see why they had a slow start, but yeah, 5-7. You got some questions here, okay? Phil Steele obviously puts together the All-MAC team, who expects to be All-MAC team. And first team, you got some pieces here, right? Defensive tackle Thomas Aiden up front. And then it's in it's all special teams. Kick returner Darylis Clark, punt returner Wayne Harris. Those are your top two receivers as well. And then long snapper Gus Goodell. So you do have some special teams pieces here to work out and pay attention to. Obviously, with a Beamer team, you expect special teams to be pretty tight. Second team, All-MAC quarterback Drew DeShields, Wayne Harris at wide receiver, tight end Tarek Mulder, offensive guard Dustin Morrell, and linebacker Rocco Nickel. You got a couple of third and fourth team there too. When you look at DeShields at quarterback, 6'2", 195, Matt, just under 56% completion percentage last year and just over 2,000 yards he took over as a starter in week 3. So you have about 75% of the season as a starter, 18 touchdowns and just 3 picks. Not a huge number. Only sacked 16 times, so that's notable as well, even though he is a little bit limited outside of the pocket running around. Did manage to get 36 yards and 3 touchdowns on the ground last year. 9 fumbles is one thing.
That's the big one.
Is one to pay attention to. 9 fumbles. Only 3 picks. 9 fumbles, 12 total turnovers to 18 touchdowns. We're going to group those together. DeShields is just feels inconsistent to me, okay? At running back, you have Jacorian Caffey, you have Brandon White, you have Mason King. I think Caffey's going to be the starter. He came from Cincinnati. 3 career snaps, 2 rushing yards, okay? Inexperience. White is a true freshman. And then Mason King is their most experienced piece there, who's been at Northern Illinois and Illinois State. He's got 203 career carries. Not a ton of action there. Still 1,160 yards, 3 touchdowns. And just to keep in mind that 965 of those yards were in 2023 and hasn't done much.
That's a long time ago.
He hasn't done much else. Hasn't done much else, okay? Almost everything. Again, 1,160 total yards, 965 happened 3 years ago. We mentioned the receivers, Wayne Harris and Ardell Banks. You also have Darylis Clark in there. The thing that sticks out to me, Matt, about this group is, other than Ardell Banks, who got just 28 targets over 2 seasons, he's got 14 catches for 225 and 2 touchdowns. He's 6'4". The other two guys, Clark and Harris, are 5'9 and 5'10 respectively, 160 and 165. These aren't big receivers at all.
They're not.
They're not big receivers at all. They're quick. They're shifty. They're all MAC projections in the return game, at punt return and at kick return. Okay? So you're expecting these guys to be shifty in space. It's just going to be paramount for the Gamecocks to get them on the ground early and often. We mentioned the tight end as well, Tarek Mulder, 6'2", 245. He came over from PC. So a little bit of South Carolina flavor there as well. Offensive line, not great. Defensive line, played less than 1,000 career snaps combined. So you do have the transfer linebacker, Nickel, that came back to Kent State after going to South Florida last year. This defense, though, it's got a couple of pieces, but that's about it. Just a couple of pieces. Not great, or inexperienced up front, not great in the back end. Couple of linebackers that have some experience. So an opportunity to go over the top, an opportunity to run and get to the second level, Matt, I think here. And I think with the offensive line kind of showing us what they've shown us, a real opportunity for South Carolina's defensive line to get started quickly and early.
I think that you're kind of like Chris Berman, the fastest 2 minutes in sports. Like, you had everything lined up. You just went boom, 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 boom. Darrealist Clark is the best name in college football. I don't care what anybody says. Like, if your name is Darrealist, like, the only thing you could have is, like, Darrealist the God, like, at end of it.
Dakotas Crawford was pretty good as well. I don't know if I'd rather be Darrealist or Dakotas.
Dakotas.
But we can debate that another day.
Justin, what do you say? Darrealist or the Dakotas?
I'm going with Dakotas. let's go with Dakotas. I like
it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm with you, Justin.
Oh, man.
Great job. Great job. That preview.
That was a great job. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Well, it's all about timing, right? We're running a hurry up offense. Kendall Browse is here, boys. We got to go. Get more snaps.
I don't think you took a breath, honestly. All right. I got to catch my breath after that. That was awesome. But so I'll go first here. We got to give a score prediction for this game. We do it every single week. We'll continue to do it into SEC play and everything else. Towson next week. I have South Carolina 48, Kent State 10. I think that they get a touchdown at some point in the game. They probably kick a field goal. I could see this 48-7, but I think the Gamecocks are going to try and kick field goals in this game. So we'll see how it all breaks down. But 48-10, Gamecocks do cover the spread in my prediction. But I want to hear – actually, Rob, I'll save you for later. Justin, what's your prediction on this game?
Let's let Rob get a drink of water, catch his breath while I go over this. What I think for the game, far as previewing the players and whatnot, I think it's really more of, Kent State's going to come into a very anxious crowd, ready to get the football season started. And I think the temperature is going to be a huge factor here. Probably not used to what they're going to be playing in. It's going to be 1,000 degrees out there at Williams-Brice Saturday afternoon. And I'm looking at South Carolina to cover. Obviously, everybody's talking about Kendall Browse. I think they cover. I'm going to go with a 42-7. And I only say that based on I think the line is going to come down around kickoff. I think you're going to see some late money come in and bring that down. And I think it's sitting at 36.5, depending on what site you're looking at. So I see it right in that 35 range when it's all said and done, come kickoff. But somehow I think Carolina's going to cover just barely. But I don't see the total. I think it's going to be an under hit here. I just think, late in the game, I don't know how much we're going to see of the first teamers. And that clock starts to run pretty quickly in the fourth quarter for a game like this.
Yeah, I think I'm not far off from Matt. I'm going to go optimistically here. I just think there's too much for South Carolina's athleticism up front on defense for these guys to get much going until you get into really testing what the reserves can do. So I think it's 35-0 at halftime and it finishes at 45-7. So I think you're gonna get a good half out of Lenora Sellers and the starters, and then you're gonna maybe one series second half, and then you're gonna get an opportunity for the backup quarterbacks to come in and see what they can do. I do think at some point with the speed of the offense that the defense gets a little gassed and somebody gets by them. Maybe it is Darrealist Clark. Maybe he makes the realest play of the game for Kent State. Can he sponsor that? Can they get that on the radio?
They should.
I need Todd Ellis giving us the Kent State Golden Flashes the realest play of the game after this is over with.
Well, it's one of those things, Rob. Like, you think about it, you said something important. Like, South Carolina should be in a position to rest their starters. And what we do know is that Kent State, until the fourth quarter, is not going to rest their starters because they need the reps. They need the experience. And Justin kind of keyed on this as well. Like, when that transition happens, how good is South Carolina's second, third team, maybe even third team when we actually get down to the nuts and bolts of it? And it's going to be a hot day, right? Like, I mean, I think Lance Player, who's always on ITG, said he'll be in the top of the West with God and the sun. It's going to be a really, really hot game. So we'll see. I think the Gamecocks should cover. I think they need to cover. I think that, they need to see some offensive fireworks for Gamecock fans to kind of just baptize themselves in the fire, right? Or in It is the fire.
It will be the fire. You can you better believe it's going to be the fire. And I will also not be covered by the sun. I mean, by an overhang, and we'll be exposed to the sun. So
I'll be there in section one, just watching the game, and I'm not looking forward to it. I'm going to drink like 80 ounces of water before I go in.
Yeah, this is one of those games where it's really tempting to hang out at the Cockaboose a little bit longer, or go back early maybe and just finish watching it in there.
You got to time it right. You definitely got to time it right.
But I just tempted.
A friendly reminder here, like, make sure you get your Gamecock tickets in your Apple Wallet. Like, there are no paper tickets. If you're not accustomed to it, you know, like, Google it, reach out to me, Rob, or Justin. We can probably help you out through it. But, like, there are no paper tickets. Don't rely on Gamecock internet, like, around the stadium. Like, that thing gets pretty crazy. So, anyway, Justin, I do want to hear about your overall thoughts from the Week 0 slate. How did you do? What surprised you? Anywhere you want to go with it, my friend.
Didn't really do a whole lot. Really more just watching and kind of enjoying it. And my takeaways were North Carolina getting a win against TCU.
Yeah.
That was impressive. I think Florida State not really taking it in New Mexico State, which is a little surprising. That was the only game I was on for the weekend, and I was on Florida State at minus 31. They only won by 17, I believe. And I was really impressed with Virginia, what they did to North Carolina State. We'll see what they kind of do kind of week to week going in. And, that's really about it. I mean, obviously USC not doing what they should have done to San Jose State. But other than that, not a whole lot of action on my end, just really more taking it in and really getting used to this Week 0 slate that we now have.
Absolutely. I think that it's same with the NFL. Like, I don't gamble a lot, but I do play like daily fantasy football. You need like 4 weeks of data to really feel confident. But I did follow JC on North Carolina Moneyline just because I was like, that's a compelling argument. And so we had our fantasy football draft this weekend. We all did not do very well. I'll put it that way. we were all on Florida State minus 19 first half. We did a little big group bet, and that was not a fun time. We were putting balls and shooting free throws halfway through the second quarter and realized it wouldn't hit. But so, Justin, really quick, before we get to our best bets, any early games you're watching, tracking, leading up to, I guess, week one, we'll call it?
I'm kind of looking at, and obviously we'll have our plays out. Well, there's a lot of games on Thursday and a lot on Friday this week, more than usual.
Saturday, Sunday, Monday too.
Right. Yeah, it seems like every day. So, obviously during the season we'll be, you know, glued in come Saturday morning. But on Thursday, looking at Colorado and Georgia Tech game, kind of intrigued to see how this shakes out. And then on Friday, we're looking at – I can't remember now. Let's see. I'm just going through my stuff. Miami goes all the way to Stanford. You're going to kind of want to see what this team's all about. A lot of teams predicting Miami to go all the way this year. They've got the new quarterback from Duke. They're laying 24.5 going all the way to California. So I'm kind of intrigued to see how that shakes out. And then Friday as well with USC playing Fresno, how they respond, or can they really get some momentum in this game. And then Saturday, Alabama – hosting ECU with their quarterback. They're laying 28.5. And then Indiana begins their title defense against North Texas, 40.5. And then scrolling down, obviously we have our game we've talked about. And then Baylor and Auburn. We're going to see what, you know, Baylor's got Florida's quarterback from last year, Auburn new coach. A lot of people are high on Auburn, kind of going under the radar. They're laying 7.5. And then let's see here. Oregon's hosting Boise State at 24.5. Want to see if that's enough points or not. And Virginia Tech is hosting VMI. They're laying 51.5 currently. So that's another game that I'm thinking about. You're going to probably see a lot of teams that I would not normally pick this week just because I'm relying on getting so many points. That's hard not to take them. let's see, one more. And then obviously LSU and Clemson is probably the biggest game. LSU currently at 10.5. So, yeah, those are a few to kind of lick your chops on.
Stanford played last night and got that win against Hawaii. You talk about Miami going across the country. You have a team that has already played one game, going to be at home. I get that it's Stanford, and you expect high power out of Miami, but 24, I agree, Justin, is interesting.
Yes.
It's interesting because there's just nothing to go on.
Right.
Well, I will say this. I'm sure that Justin, and I'm going to put him on the spot right now. I'm sure he has something cooking for Gamecock fans as a special promo for his website. So we'll let him think about that and what he wants to do as Rob and I go through our best bets. Justin, you're a pro at this. You know how it works. We're going to give our picks. You're going to give your thoughts on our bets. Rob, this is a cumulative total. So if you beat me this week, I'm coming back for you next week. But
okay,
we're gonna track it the whole season, and normally what normally happens is that I'm not very good, my guess is very good, and Justin's way better. So Justin will give you your take, and then we'll be able to talk to him about it after the fact. So Rob, do you want to go first, or would you like me to go first?
You go for it. You're good.
Yeah, I mean, age before beauty, as always.
How'd it work?
Justin talked about this game. It was Fresno State and Southern Cal. The over-under in this game is 51.5. If the game is at Southern Cal, Southern Cal is a 23.5-point favorite. I think Southern Cal got the opening game yips. I don't think their defense was ready to play. I know there were like 10,000 people in the stadium, but Southern Cal is way more talented than Fresno State. I think they can score 45 plus in this game. I think the offense is good enough. So I'll take Southern Cal -23.5. Justin, your thoughts?
No, I like it. I'm with you. I like them to bounce back and really, you know, so that's the hard thing about college football. They don't really have the preseason game. So I think that was their preseason game. They'll respond, and you'll probably see some recency bias when it comes to the betting line.
So, Rob, like, honest to God, like, anytime that Justin says he likes my bet, I just get an emotional feeling that's like, maybe I can pay my house off.
All right, I'm going to reach a little bit here on the first one. And I don't think I'm paying off anything, but it jumped out to me immediately because Matt and I have been so high on this team. Oklahoma hosts UTEP, and they're a 41.5-point favorite here. My issue is that I don't know that UTEP can move the ball on this Oklahoma defense. I think Oklahoma's defense is one of the best in the country. I think that right now, as an Oklahoma offense, you're as healthy as you're ever going to be. So I expect them to light up the scoreboard. So I'm taking Oklahoma to cover that 41.5 because I'm not sure UTEP crosses the 50.
Yeah, I'm a little indifferent on this. It's probably a stay away from me. And the only reason I say this, I wonder if Oklahoma can get in the 40s just to get that cover, you know, with how long is Mateer going to play? Yes, I'm with you on the defense. I just don't know that UTEP's going to score. So Oklahoma's going to have to cover it on offense alone, and I worry about that in these week one games.
So, Rob, I'll just throw in, Justin will take the heavy underdog a lot. He just says that. And I don't want to speak for you, Justin, but so many different things can happen in a game. And when you have to cover that many points early in the season, how are you going to do it? So I feel really good that I seem to be 1-0 against Rob, but next week we'll tell the story when it's all said and done. All right, we're going to go and get this one out of the way. We have Clemson, LSU. The over-under is 51.5. LSU is a 10.5-point favorite. I'm taking the under 51.5, and my rationale here is that I've heard too much about Clemson's quarterback situation, the offensive line. I know they have playmakers at wide receiver. I know they have a potential playmaking running back, but I think that Dabo is going to want to muck this game up as much as he possibly can. I don't think he wants to get in a high-scoring affair with Lane Kiffin on the road. I do think that Clemson probably gets like a late cover, maybe like 4 minutes to go in the game to score a touchdown, and they were down 17 or something like that. So I'll take the under 51.5 in this game. Justin, thoughts?
I like it. I just don't know that Clemson can score to keep up. I expect this to be a 24-10 game, something like that, maybe. I think LSU is going to cover, though. I will disagree on that end. I just don't know that Clemson has enough firepower with, at quarterback to keep them in this game.
Matt, can, correct me here. Am I supposed to be picking your games? Or am I supposed
No. Oh, you just throw your games out there.
Okay,
just making sure
I wasn't supposed to go against you here, because I'll pick yours and beat you that way, too. All right.
I love it. Let's go.
Shoot.
So this one kind of stands out to me. A lot of people high on Boise State early on as one of those fly like a G6 teams that are going to get into the college football playoff. I'm not sure. I'm not so sure how I feel about that in a game against Oregon to kick it off. We know what Oregon's going to do. A lot of people high on them. Dante Moore is back. You did lose your offensive coordinator, but I'm just not sure the track record of what we know about Oregon that I see the offense really slowing down with a Dan Lanning defense. This one is Oregon by it's 24.5. I'm gonna take the Ducks in that because I think they're gonna light the scoreboard up here, and I don't know that Boise State is gonna be able to keep up.
Yes, I'm with you on this one, Rob. I think Oregon is really gonna try to show off here, and I see a blowout happening.
And that defense is so fast and so good. This is one I thought about, Rob. It's not on my list, but I agree with you.
All right.
My next one, and this is one I'm kind of scared about, but I feel confident, as confident as I can feel in week one. But it's Wisconsin-Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a 20.5-point favorite, over under 47.5. I'm going to take Notre Dame minus 20.5, and the reason is because Notre Dame doesn't play anybody all year. Wisconsin's still a name brand in the sport. Wisconsin would look a lot better if this was 1997 then, or 2007, they look in 2026. I think that the betting market, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, is still giving too much credit to Wisconsin's name brand. I think Notre Dame is going to try after, not winning enough games the past couple of years against big teams and having those style points. I think they're going to go out there and they're going to dominate. I think it's one of the best defenses in the country. I don't believe in Luke Fickell's offensive coordinator situation. Give me Notre Dame minus 20.5.
This is a stay away for me just because, Freeman and his crew have shown to get off to slow starts and lose some games. So, to me, I think 21, whatever it may be, if that thing creeps up in the 22, 23 range, that's kind of enticing to take Wisconsin here. So,
Rob, now I've lost all moral confidence in myself. I had two in a row, and Justin just poured cold water on me. I have no faith in my next two picks.
All right, I've got some SEC flavor coming up. This is a big one on ABC, 3:30, Baylor and Auburn in the Aflac kickoff. I'm strangely high on this Auburn team, and I don't think that going to Baylor is going to be the solve it for DJ Lagway. I expect some turnovers from him again. We saw this matchup last year. It's Auburn minus 7, and I think that they win the game. So I'm just going to go ahead and take it all the way. I think it's probably a 10-point ball game.
Yeah, I like this. I like Auburn a lot here. This is just a better matchup for them. I look for them to get off to a good start. It's going to be a heavy crowd there in Atlanta. So give me the Auburn Tigers to get off to a good start.
So now I'm terrified because I wanted to pick that, but I didn't. And now I have two games left. I love that, Rob. Like I'm high on Auburn as well for what it's worth. It might be false confidence because it is Auburn and it's a new head coach, but I think they're going to get stuff figured out this year. And Baylor does not scare me at all. So I love that pick. All right. We got Louisville versus Ole Miss. We're getting into the later part of the weekend here. Ole Miss is a 6.5-point favorite. The over-under is 55.5. I think this game has shootout potential, but I will take Ole Miss minus 6.5. I think that the fourth quarter is going to matter, and I don't know if Louisville can stop Ole Miss, and I think Ole Miss will be able to stop Louisville when it matters.
Yeah, I like Ole Miss here a lot. This line is, I don't know, it's just a little tricky to me. I think this probably should be higher than what it is, to be honest with you. 6.5 seems low, and so I'd be cautious there, but I really like Ole Miss in this spot to really send a message to the SEC here.
All right. I like it too. I do. I think Ole Miss is going to do something. But watch out for Brohm. You don't want to count him out most of the time. All right. I've got another SEC one here as Vanderbilt is favored by 30.5 over Austin Peay. I'm going to take the Governors to actually cover that because I'm not sold on Vanderbilt scoring much more than 30 points. I think if Austin Peay gets on the board with a touchdown, they cover that 30.5.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really don't know. The quarterback situation here is just, you know.
Game one?
Yeah.
We're going to score 35 points?
Yeah, I'm with you on this. It's probably a lean the same way you're talking, for sure.
Well, I'm now nervous because, you know, Rob started slow with UTEP, Oklahoma, and now it is a situation where I'm sweating as I go into my last game. Last game of the schedule for me is SMU at Florida State. It's Monday night. SMU, the line moved today to -3. That seems like a lot of public perception. The over-under is 53.5. Look, I think this is the easiest game on the schedule, so I am Joe Public. I think SMU -3 is a lock of the century, and Justin has to tell me not to put my mortgage on it because I can just see a clear and free life after this when my mortgage is paid off.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'll be putting the house on it, but I do like
it. I'll put your house on it, Justin. I'll put Rob's house on it. We'll all be debt free.
Fair enough.
Split the losses with me.
I like SMU here as well. I just don't. I saw a lot, or not a lot, from Florida State the other night. Give me SMU here to take over.
I like it too. And speaking of teams we've seen, how about two teams that we saw yesterday? UNLV favored by 3 over Hawaii. I like that. And in fact, I think I like that a lot because I love Danny Kicks and I think this UNLV team has a lot of talent. It's not just Jackson Arnold. I don't have the faith in an 0-1 Hawaii team that just lost to Stanford to keep this within 3 points. Give me the Rebels.
Love it. I'm all over this. This is a great matchup for UNLV. I like them to roll in this matchup.
Well, Justin, now is the time. What kind of promo are you going to do for Gamecock fans?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, you know, I said we were going to keep it through the summer. We'll do another week at $9.99 for the month. So we'll just normal login, no discount, just go sign up, and that's what it'll be. I'll have it set to that. And that'll get you all the picks for all the sports that are going on. MLB, really. Golf's over, kind of. They've wrapped up this week. So, really, college football and MLB right now. So, yeah, go check it out.
Guys, when I say this, like, I have access to Justin's website. I see his picks every single week. You're not going to lose money. I promise you that. I don't care if you bet $1 a game. You keep this for a month, you're not going to lose money. Justin is the sharpest guy that I have contact with every day. So go ahead and join that and let Justin help you make some more money. Rob, Justin, this was great. Really appreciate it. We're in the heart of the season now. This is the most exciting time. And before we know it, it's going to blink and we're going to be in December and the season is going to be over. So we look forward to seeing everybody every Sunday night. And we might have some extra episodes throughout the week. So stay tuned to that. When you give us your time, you give us the most valuable thing you have. So thank you for that. We cannot thank you enough for spending an hour and 15 minutes of your Sunday night with us. So thank you. We hope everyone has a great week, and we'll see you all soon.